welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And I'm sure if you call that number, wherever you are in the country, they'll tell you who to talk to in your state. We are broadcasting here live, of course, at Morgan State University, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, Baltimore's public radio station, and broadcasting across the country on Free Speech TV, as well as streaming live at steinershow.org. And in this hour, we are talking with Rabbi Jeff Basik, who is rabbi of the Kol Halev Synagogue here in Baltimore, and Father Bob Albright, former Catholic campus minister at Towson University. And they are talking around the communities about Catholic Jewish faiths, the bridges, and some of the ones that have been burned over the years. We'll talk about during the course of this hour as well. And Rabbi Basik, I never called you that before, but Rabbi Basik, I say that because he's as close to a rabbi as I get. No, I'm just kidding. He's been I've been part of his synagogue. And Father Bob Albright, good to have you here as well. 410-319-8888. You can join us here for this conversation that is toll-free on your cell phone around the country. So join us. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And welcome both of you. It's great to have you on the air with us.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for the invitation.
Well, it's great having you here. So Maisie might be watching live right now.
Good. Hi, Maisie.
So Maisie's my daughter, and they have a relationship in terms of this world. Let me start with this. I said I was going to make this kind of aside. I might, you know, the Catholic Jewish worlds have been divided since the beginning in many ways. I mean, I could look through the history of the early leaders of the church and what they said about Jews, and that even some of the great names in the history of the Catholic faith that we can go back to, St. Augustine and more, have said things about Jews that, you know, that temples being burned and popes trying to say don't do it, but some of the people who have made saints over the years saying, "Oh no, that was good because they're defiling and they killed our Lord Jesus." And I years ago we made up for this kind of Christian Jewish gathering as a semi-joke this hymn, and I started off with Jesus was a Jew and he died for you, and that's where the problem started. And so
that's it in a nutshell. And
so let's start there. I mean, because it has been I think in the history between Jews and Christians, and Jews and Catholics in particular, a tremendous divide.
Yes, I think that the
Bob Albright,
as I mentioned to you before, the word in that statement is the you. Who is the you that Jesus died for you, for example? And this, of course, has been interpreted so many different ways, and we have come over 2,000 years of this long journey that's been pretty stormy. And even though it began rather well in terms of Jesus being a Jewish reformer, someone within the Jewish community of his own day who was in some way reforming his own people to understand the covenant according to their own categories and who they were in first century Israel. And this movement took on shape once he was crucified and risen from the dead, and his disciples believed that very, very strongly. And then it moved away from Judaism into the Gentile world, into the non-Jewish world. And when it did that, I think that's where the divide begins and all of our problems begin to develop.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I'd like to start even earlier in our mythology, and that is with Joseph. Mm-hmm. So just next week, it turns out, coincidentally, a happy coincidence, just next week, we begin reading the Joseph saga in the sequential reading of Torah. And Joseph is sent to find his brothers, and he meets this stranger in the middle of the field. And the stranger asks, "What are you looking for?" And he says, "I seek my brothers." Right? I'm looking for my brothers. Now, at the end of the tale, the paradigm has shifted away from power dynamics and hate and envy, you know, of course, the story of him and his brothers, into a new paradigm of reconciliation, a new power dynamic of brothers, as a brother, with brothers. And that's what I think is represented in this exhibit at the Jewish Museum that we're here to talk about, and Pope John Paul II. It's that shift from the beginning of the Joseph story. hated enemies, biological brothers maybe, but envious and jealous and one dominant, you know, others dominant and dominated, to at the end of the story, I am. It's a different power dynamic. So that's the history that you're introducing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, 2,000 years of a hateful and power dynamic.
And to bring that story kind of full circle, Pope John the 23rd, the one who called the Second Vatican Council, when he met with the Jewish contingent that came to that council and eventually formed the document that we call Nostra Aetate, the document on the relation between Catholics and non-Christians, when he walked into that particular gathering of all Jews, he said, "Good morning, I'm Joseph, your brother," because his original name, Giuseppe, Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli, his middle name was Joseph. And so he brings that story to light. And this is the beginning of the reconciliation, certainly between Catholics and Jews, that begins with the document Nostra Aetate, and that's 1965.
Right. I mean, if anything, just in terms of the Catholic Church alone, Pope John the 23rd, the battle within the Church for the soul of the Church in the modern era began with that pope.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, he opened the windows. He called it aggiornamento, and he wanted all the windows opened, and he said, let in all the fresh air, and let's see what's going on. And Jules Isaac came to him.
Who was who?
Jewish representative.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to him about the whole question of the relations with Christians and Jews, and eventually became a member of the committee that worked on this document called In Our Time, Nostra Aetate, promulgated in the year 1965, a document, a declaration on the relation between Catholics and all other religions. And there's a especially long section of this document on the relation with the Jews. And a lot of that was a part of Jules Isaac and Abraham Heschel and an awful lot of big names that we know about in the Jewish community at that time.
But some people know about. Maybe people never heard these names.
Yeah, that's true.
Even
so
this
is, of course, after the world is shocked by the Holocaust.
Right.
Right. And the suggestion, let's call it a suggestion, that 2,000 years of anti-Jewish polemics on the part of the church was the necessary preparation.
Underpinning, so to speak, right?
Right.
Yep.
So necessary, though not sufficient, for the Holocaust. So then everyone is shocked. And Pope John the 23rd needs to bring the church up to date.
He lived through that. When he lived through that, and we know we have facts about him saving boatloads of Jewish children by forging baptismal certificates for them and things of that nature. So he lived through that period, and when he becomes pope, he says to himself, wait a minute, you know, how could this happen? How could my church let this happen? And that was a big, big determination in his calling of the Council of Vatican II. I think Vatican II was definitely a response on the part of the Catholic Church to the Holocaust. There's no question about that.
And the issues it had to wrestle with itself over the Holocaust, internally inside the Church.
Yes, absolutely.
It still comes up.
Over and over, yeah. And we're doing that all the time. Even since this document, this was a foundation document, the document of Vatican II. We call it a foundation document because nothing this positive about Jews and Christians was ever written prior to this in the history of the Church. All the other documents that talked about Jews were very negative over the years. And this document is a foundation document. Now, since this document, 1965, there have been other minor documents and major documents that have been written, one especially on the Shoah, on the Holocaust, that came out in the early 90s from the Church, and I'm sorry I don't have a date. But this other one is called The Jewish People and Their Sacred Scriptures in the Christian Bible, and this came out in 2002. So there have been major documents that have been follow-ups because this basic document didn't say a lot. It just opened the doorway to Jewish-Christian relations for the future, but it didn't say a lot. And the person who developed most of these ideas was John Paul II, who this whole exhibit is about.
We'll talk about this Jewish exhibit.
Museum. And yeah. It's this John Paul II who, as a bishop, attended Vatican II.
Right.
From 62 to 65, as a bishop, he was there. And I beg to differ, actually. I think Nostra Aetate says a lot. And here's basically what I understand it to say, that there are elements of truth and holiness in every religious path. That's huge, right? It promotes dialogue. It has a tone of mutual appreciation and respect and understanding. I think this is a watershed. It's huge. And later on, it got a Jewish response, Dabru Emet, which we can talk about later.
One thing it doesn't say, and this is why it's very foundational, and I love to argue with him because that's what Jews do. They love to argue. I always teach my classes in the Bible class that life is in the argument. Once you have the answer, life is over.
Of course, yeah. There is no answer, exactly. So they might as well just keep arguing.
Sacred disputation.
But the whole thrust of the document comes in the life of John Paul II, who took this document further than anyone that we know of. And he came to the conclusion that Judaism and Christianity are not two different religions, but rather, from our point of view, Judaism is intrinsic to Christianity. And he just made this statement, and then he's left allowing the rest of us to run with it and to begin to develop that statement and to see what that means and if it has any meaning. And Father John Pelikowski, who just spoke down at the Jewish Museum as part of this exhibit, he raised that question and he said, that's fine for us Christians, but do Jews see that this way? Do Jews see Christianity as intrinsic to themselves as we see Judaism intrinsic to ourselves?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure, Jeff.
Well, that's why I started with Joseph, because in this case, the case that you're talking about, so the Jews are the elder brothers. So in a sense, it's really the flip side of the coin, that the church represents Joseph's older brothers, the ones that hated and envied and persecuted him, mm-hmm. Right? Do we see ourselves as somehow intrinsic to Christianity? No, I think that there is a limit to the commonalities that we can speak to. There are differences. There are, you know, the whole basic narrative is different. Related, but two separate and different things. Well, and I think those differences need to be respected.
Well, let me ask you to reflect on, come back to where we are with this exhibit and where we are, because something popped in my head as you were both talking. I want you to reflect on this. I want listeners to join us at 410-319-8888. When we look at what you two are doing in trying to create a dialogue between Catholics and Jews, between Christians and Jews, and I would say Christians, Jews, and Muslims, all the faiths of Abraham,
right.
And the great divides that exist in this world around that. And I think right now of Israel, Palestine, and the Holy Land, and the whole idea of who owns Jerusalem, who owns the sites, to whom do they belong? To the start of the Intifada at Al-Aqsa Mosque, to the murdering in Baghdad just this other week of all the Catholics worshiping by madmen from Al-Qaeda who just decided to kill Catholics in Iraq, in a country that was a city that for 1,000 years where everybody got along. There was a plurality Jewish city was Baghdad until the 1950s. And so we see, but then we see this thing can explode. So when we talk about what you two are talking about with this exhibit, but the reality on the ground sometimes is very much different and seething.
I can speak to that.
Go ahead, Jeff Bassick, Rabbi Jeff.
So my sense of it is that hatred comes from fear. Fear comes from ignorance. And where does ignorance come from? Separation. Lack of personal contact. And that has really been the story, right? The solution, the personal contact, is embodied in the boy who grows up to be the Pope, right? where he lives in proximity in the same apartment as Jews. He goes to school with Jews. He plays sports with Jews. He's in a theater group with Jews. He has
Pope John Paul II we're talking about.
Right. He has Jewish friends, right? It's personal contact that dispels the mythology, dispels the ignorance, and therefore the fear, and therefore the hatred. You know, it seems to me, I remember from Clifford Geertz, this great anthropologist, Clifford Geertz, he says, the world can be read in small things. And there's an artifact at this museum exhibit that is a put-together soccer ball. It's not a very contemporary one. It's the one that's, you know, wound with string and rubber bands and everything else. Soccer ball. Kids of different faiths and backgrounds playing on the same soccer field. In fact, this boy who grew up to be the Pope played goalie for the Jewish kids' team. Right. So I think that the things that you point to, the divisions and the really different visions of the world, have to do with separation, ignorance, right? And the sort of circling the wagons kind of approach, right? Hold everybody at bay. Instead of the overlap of personal contact. That's really the inspirational message of this exhibit.
Yeah.
Right?
John Paul was the first pope in our history to have that kind of contact with Jews. If you remember in the Catholic history, the majority of our popes were Italian. And Italy just didn't have that big population of Judaism, certainly as Poland did. And John Paul just grew up rubbing shoulders. One of his closest friends was Jerzy Kluger, a young Jewish boy he grew up with and a man that he embraced as Pope. And that whole story is being told in this exhibit. And we see the two of them go side by side through that unfortunate dark period of the Holocaust. And coming out of that differently, John Paul came out of that differently. I think he came out the way the 23rd came out, re-examining the whole church and the whole question of Christianity and our whole history. And I think they just realized, both of them, and maybe John Paul in more of a personal way because of his personal relation with the Jewish kids in his town in Wadowice. And by the way, I think he played goalie because he didn't like to run. That's the story. he liked that position so he could just stand there and do nothing. That's the story that's told. But this whole exhibit shows that movement of a man who has this kind of a contact on such a personal level and experiential level that many of the other popes never had, and then he becomes the pope. And that's a phenomenal moment in the history. In a book called The Hidden Pope, and I'm sorry I don't have the name of the author in the back of my head.
We'll find it.
But that would be great. The book called The Hidden Pope, where they tell the whole story of Jerzy and John Paul together. The whole book begins with Jerzy sitting at his dentist and listening to the radio. And all of a sudden, the announcement comes over that Karol Wojtyła, his boyhood friend, was just elected Pope of the Roman Catholic Church. And he jumps out of his dentist chair and goes bananas, you know, over this whole thing. And within 2 hours, Jerzy was called by John Paul to come to the Vatican, and within a week, he was there as his special guest at the Vatican. This is how close a relationship these two men had.
Darcy O'Brien. The Hidden Pope, the untold story of a lifelong friendship that is changing the relationship between Catholics and Jews, the personal journey of John Paul II and Jerzy Kluger. That's the book you're talking about.
Exactly.
Right.
Wonderful, yeah. And that's part of the story that goes on at this exhibit over at the Jewish Museum of Maryland. And I had the privilege of going up to be a scout for to bring it here to Baltimore. We went up to Alvernia University. So
this exhibit, you mean?
This exhibit up in Reading, Pennsylvania. And a group of us saw it. And the minute we saw it, we just said, we have got to bring it to the Baltimore people. Because we have here a history of relations between Christians and Jews in this area, in the Baltimore area, that goes back to Rabbi Agus and Cardinal Sheehan. where the two of them began a relationship that has flourished to this moment where we sit here today and are able to in some way or another overcome those 2,000 years of dark history.
Yeah. Folks, we want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. A Blessing to One Another is the Pope John Paul II and the Jewish People is an exhibit here in Baltimore, the Jewish Museum, but travels the country, may have been in your community, may be coming to your community. We want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the importance, or we may see the lack of importance, of this issue. Of dialogue, understanding between the crosses, lines between Catholics and Jews, and where it stands in the world today. Some folks look at the religion itself as the root of the problems that we have. Others saying the way we get through that is to cross these lines now. What do you think? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And our guests are Rabbi Jeff Basick, Rabbi of Kol Halev Congregation, and Father Bob Albright, former Catholic campus minister at Towson University. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, and we'll get to your calls and questions in just a second. I mean, and people could ask that question. I mean, I remember as a kid, one of the books that I first saw in my house as a Jewish kid was a book on Catholic power. And on the power of the church and what it has done over the centuries. So, you know, and my mother, of course, grew up in a convent, you know, raised by nuns. And so both those worlds lived in our home growing up. And so the distrust was there, and also the bridge was there. And I think that's the reality of where things are in many ways. I mean, it's so, it runs very deep, you know? I mean, I wonder what you really think the importance is of what you two are doing at the moment and how either broad or isolated you think it is.
Great question. So the chasm is deep. It is millennia old, right? And the power in the Western imagination of the demonizing of the Jews, you know, is not to be underestimated. So I think we are, you know, a pretty small voice in this history. You have to start somewhere.
We being the two of you,
yeah,
we being Jews?
We and the whole nature of Christian-Jewish dialogue. Clearly, it's a huge chasm, and we are just the first attempt to bridge, to meet again and form a brotherhood instead of the power dynamic that has existed for 2,000 years. I'm under no illusion that this is easy, that you can snap your fingers and change, you know, a psyche and an imagination that's created over centuries and centuries, right? But I read the latter half of the Joseph saga as more important than the beginning. We know the beginning, right? Brothers that hated each other. It's a completely dysfunctional family. It goes back generations in this mythology. You know, Isaac and Ishmael, Jacob and Esau, Joseph and his brothers. But in the end, what is it you're looking for? I seek my brothers. That's our task. It might be, you know, whistling in the dark, but I don't think so. I do not think so.
But before you jump into this, Bob, let me bring a caller in here. I want you to kind of mold this for me. 410-319-8888, and Alan, you're on the air.
Sounds like a love fest, so I'm going to throw one quote out to my rabbi. The worst thing that's ever happened to the Jewish people after the Holocaust is the creation of the State of Israel. That's Bob Avakian, and I believe that. And the second thing is to the Catholic priest. You know, y'all talk about all this love of the Jewish people and, you know, love of the Jewish, you know. And then every time I go to an abortion clinic, you know, there are the good Christians waving pictures of bloody fetuses and talking about how abortion is murder and how the Pope sanctifies this male chauvinist sexist, oppressive behavior towards women. And even the great Pope John Paul, who you all seem to love so much, went down to Peru and condemned the Shining Path for standing up for the rights of the Peruvian people. So you got a lot of work to do, especially because the Catholic Church empowers so many other Christian denominations to blockade abortion clinics. And then the worst thing about it is they talk about the Holocaust, like this is the new Holocaust because women dare to control their own lives. You know, and you know, you need to do some serious homework, and you need to apologize to the women and gays of the world for what you've done.
Okay, let's introspection here.
Let's back up. Can you repeat again and amplify why you think the creation of Israel was the worst thing to happen?
I think the creation of Israel was the worst thing that happened to Jewish people because we had no business being in the land that's Palestinians. It should be a secular state that the Zionists collaborated in some places like the Warsaw Ghetto with the Nazis. That my mother knew David Ben-Gurion, and she said, he told her not to worry about the Holocaust. There was the creation of the State of Israel was more important. I think we need to stop thinking like Zionists and start thinking like human beings.
Okay, but here's what we have to do here, right here. This, you raised some really serious issues. I'm going to let our guests wrestle with the issues when we come back from this break. We're not going to ignore the questions. We're going to talk about them when we come back, but we do have to take a break. And probably it's good that we take a break here so we can kind of
take
a breath, collect our thoughts, and wrestle with what we've just been given. 410-319-8888 is never here. We'll come back. Rabbi Jeff Basick and Father Bob Albright are our guests. Catholic-Jewish dialogue is what we're talking about during the course of this hour. And let me read a quick thing here on the way to break. That support for WEAA is provided by Chef Max Louisiana Cuisine, available for catering for all holiday parties and special occasions. Open Monday through Thursdays, 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, 12 p.m. to 9 p.m., located at 4311 Hartford Road. The number is 410-319-6227. That's 410-319-6227. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're here with Rabbi Jeff Basick and Father Bob Albright. Rabbi Basick is rabbi of the Kol Halev Synagogue. Father Albright was Catholic campus minister at Taos University. They're talking about the conversations between Catholics and Jews, dialogue being created, talking about a traveling exhibit going around the country. It's now at the Jewish Museum of Baltimore, a blessing to one another, Pope John Paul II and the Jewish people. Perhaps you've seen it in your city. Perhaps it's coming to your city. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. So we won't spend a lot of time here, but we do have to wrestle a bit with what our caller said. Jeff, you want to start?
I was hoping Bob would start, but yes, I will start. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So I agree with the caller, and I hear his passion and his hurt, actually, that politics is the art of imperfect solutions. And sometimes the solution to one thing creates, you know, an additional problem, granted. The creation of the State of Israel, though, was a solution to the desperate situation of the Jewish people. And I agree with you. Its solution has been imperfect. And there are lots of problems. But I can't agree at all that it was the worst thing to happen for the Jewish people. And I'll let Bob speak to the political positions that the church takes.
Yeah, I think we're not naive to all the questions that you raise. And perhaps it's all those questions and all those issues that have forced us to, in some way or another, begin to examine once again the vision that the church should have and the vision that was given to us through our ancestors down through the ages that we call the Bible, and the faith of these people, and that this vision is something that we're trying to uphold and trying to encourage and trying to bring about in some way, despite all of these issues and all of these questions and sometimes the sins of the past and the sins of the present in the church. And the church is a human institution. There's no question about it, huh? It also has its divine and its mystical side, but it has its human side with all of those limitations. And we do things wrong. Yet we have apologized at times, but not perhaps about everything and all of the issues that you raised. But in terms of the Jewish-Christian question and in terms of what we're talking about particularly today, those things we have begun to deal with these issues, and lots is being written about it and has been written about it, and we continue in some way or another to try to embody all of that in our own lives and what we do. And if we beat ourselves all the time about the, you know, I always tell people when they're looking at their lives, you know, make a list of all the positive things in your life, but make a list of all the negative things. And you see the balance in your life. And we have to learn to, like every institution and every person has something to live up to and something to live down. And this is part of life and the life that has been given us. And we're trying in some way or another, huh, to do our best to live down some of these things. But at the same time, we're trying to live up to the vision that has been given to us that we share as Jews and Christians in this world.
So how do you bridge a world when people of a given faith believe their faith is the one faith, that is the faith that is God's word, and that even that word, God's word, that is so different. And so, I mean, how do you bridge that? I mean, how do you, you know, that if some people say the only way of salvation is if you accept Jesus, only way of salvation is if you accept Allah, you know, that... That's not the question at all. That if that we were given the Torah, given the Ten Commandments, and we are the chosen people, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, these are very real, and you've got to be able to. I mean, people have been wrestling with this for a long time. So I'm curious how you begin to think that you sort that out.
Well, I've wrestled with the chosenness a lot.
Yeah.
And here's the solution that works for me. So I think there's something really nice about feeling special. But I don't want to deny that specialness, that chosenness to others.
Right.
So I change my liturgy to, instead of chosen from among all the peoples, I'm chosen with other peoples, so that I can recognize that there is truth and holiness in different paths.
But you're changing it then, right? You are changing it in essence. You're changing a viewpoint people have held for a long time, defining it in a different way for your congregation, for the people you work with, for yourself.
Right, because I think that our religions need to evolve, right? They need to reflect the learning and science and sensibilities of the current generation. So it's no longer true that the church says that the church is the only way to get to heaven. The only path of salvation is the church. That is not the case. So this is what I'm saying, that there's a respect for different faith traditions. Why? Because we all are attempting at best to capture something true. And that attempt is usually partial. So at least I will humble myself to say that my truth claims are partial at best, and others may have a different version of it.
And come from where you come from your lineage, come from your community.
So I want to be authentic to my story.
Right.
Right. I can't be, for example, a Tibetan Buddhist.
Which doesn't deny Father Albright.
That's
your
right.
story.
Absolutely. No, and I think the way we deal with this is dialogue. And forgive me for being patronizing here, but I think that's what's marvelous about your show. you have a show of dialogue. You dialogue with people, and you have people dialogue with each other, and they dialogue with people who call on the phone. And this is very, very important, because we can make a statement like our word, like chosen, and my gosh, we don't even know what that word means exactly. And then when we start examining our scripture and see where it's used, right, and things like this here, and then talk to each other from our different perspectives about what we think that means, because we can't just every Tom, Dick, and Harry off the street, you know, say what they think that word means. We have to look at this from a very authentic point of view. And as we do that in dialogue, my God, we come to a magnificent level.
The progressive end of the spiritual community has to be heard in deeper ways if we're gonna get through some of the stuff that we're facing.
Yes.
And the Islamic community and the Buddhist community and the Hindu community and the Jewish community and the Catholic community and the Black Protestant community and the White Protestant communities. I mean, that has to happen.
I think we need to encourage each other to be the best that we can be within those traditions. Be the best Catholic you can be.
Right.
Right. Be the best Muslim you can be.
Right.
Right.
If you enter into a dialogue with someone and you're already shaky about your own identity, it's going to be very difficult.
But let's see what our listeners think from around the country here. 410-319-8888. Let's go to first Kerry in Mississippi. You're on the air.
Hello.
Welcome, Kerry. You're on the air.
What I said I'm a Muslim, and I'm proud to see this dialogue going.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a Muslim, and I'm proud to see this TV, you know, giving me this understanding of the Jews. Although I grew up with them, I'm originally from Morocco.
Uh-huh.
And if you notice that they were kicked out of Spain with the Muslims, you know, by the Catholics back in the history. But what I'm trying to say, Muslim and a Christian and a Jew and all other religions have love in their religion.
That's true.
That's what we need to give each other.
Absolutely.
Okay, and you're absolutely right. I mean, there's the history of Jews and Muslims in Morocco is a glorious history. For the most part,
we're still friends with each other, right. We're still married from each other, we
right.
still live with each other,
right.
We shop from each other, we don't have no hatred over there. But when you come here and in the United States and other countries, you start to see that, I don't understand.
I think that's we've done programs of this before, and now that we're on the TV, we're going to be doing more programs about just this particular issue of Jews and Muslims throughout the Arab world have lived together for centuries.
Right.
In peace, in Spain.
Right.
The whole world was built by Jews and Muslim scholars. Morocco, Baghdad was a city that 44% of Baghdad was Jewish. And every Iraqi I interview who's a Muslim or a Christian talks about their friendships of Jews growing up in Baghdad, how close they were, how their mothers suckled each other's children and share children and raise people together. That, I mean, these are stories we don't hear. That's what we have to hear if we're going to get to a place where we actually live with one another. And I'm so happy you called, Kerry, and got us to that place. Thank you. Kerry from Mississippi, good to hear from you. But let's go to 410-319-8888. And I think it says Tammy in California. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, welcome, Tammy.
Yes, God knows in our hearts the ones who truly love each other regardless of, you know, culture or religion, and he understands us all. In regards to the chosen people, I've done a lot of studies, and what I found out is the Jewish people were the first ones who worshiped the single God as Jehovah God. And that's why they became the chosen people, and more like a kind of like a guinea pig. God wanted to see what he would do.
That's not very kosher there, Tammy.
Because they've suffered, even though they've been chosen, they've suffered a lot. And I don't see why anybody should really look at him as, you know, being jealous of him or anything like that. Unfortunately, that's what they're tagged with. But that's what I thought of Jewish and. God bless us all, and the love is what counts.
Tammy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tammy. I want to add one more thing to that.
Please.
It's my preference to talk about the choosing people.
I like that.
Rather than being chosen, we need to make active choices. We need to choose a life of, well, I would call it the potential of holiness, right? So that's the choosing rather than being chosen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chosenness is a misunderstood term. I think when we hear the word chosen, we think special. Well, look at the history of Jews. If that's special, okay, my
give
God.
Give it to somebody else.
But really, yes, we all
choose someone else. Yeah.
But we all want to be special. I mean, the Chinese are special.
Yes,
everybody's
absolutely.
Special.
Yeah.
But all that's changing in the sense that, I mean, when you look at almost every indigenous native culture in America, in their own language, call themselves the people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we've done, because it was a question of survival in the world and surviving against whatever it is we were surviving against, who the people are. And so, but we're in a place now where all of the people have to kind of yield some of that and move across the lines if we're going to live and respect and say that everybody is following a tradition and path that comes out of their life experience, comes out of their being, and is their path, but not the path.
Yeah,
right.
Because rubbing shoulders with each other can have two, you know, reactions to that. It can be, oh, wonderful, now I get to know you a little bit better. But then getting to know each other a little bit better also raises issues and problems. Yeah. So there's two sides to that, to just about everything that happens to us, but especially that. And I think in the world of globalization today, where we are rubbing shoulders with everyone, it's scaring some people. Some people get scared of that, and like a turtle, they retract and go back into the shell. Other people find it fascinating. I find diversity just the most exciting thing there is.
It'd be so boring to live in a place that wasn't diverse.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Completely boring.
Yeah. And the beauty of it, I often refer to it as maybe the only will of God. People use that term, will of God, all the time. Maybe it's the only will of God we can point to that is authentic in some way. Because when we look at life, especially now as the leaves are falling, no two leaves are the same. No two people think the same. And I just love that diversity. And I think that's a challenge to us, to dialogue. And that's why we need to dialogue.
I'd like to share one more thing.
Please do. Then we'll go back to one.
So a number of years ago, I hope it's still going, but there was something called the Thomas More Project.
Oh, yeah.
That put Jewish studies into St. Francis Academy, a inner-city Catholic school.
Great school. Right. African-American boys in middle school, incredible school.
Right. And girls.
Girls.
So I was the first teacher that for 3 years, you know, taught Hebrew scriptures or Holocaust studies or whatever the subject was, didn't really matter. Because someone mentioned Heschel. Heschel said, we don't need more textbooks. We need more text people. I was the textbook in front of these kids.
You were a rabbi in an all-black Catholic
school. I wasn't
a
rabbi at the time. I was a teacher, Jewish studies teacher. And really, it was the personal contact, regardless of anything we read or studied or talked about. It was getting to know each other that, no, I don't have horns. And no, they're not all a bunch of hoodlums or you know, teenage mothers or, you know, whatever it was, right? So the rubbing shoulders means that I get to know you. I'm not so afraid of you. I don't hate you, right? How could I hurt you? Right? I really think it's this personal contact that is the answer, not the circle the wagons and separate each other.
You know, I want to say this, that we're going back to the phones here, and Alan called back.
Alan.
But brother, let me tell you this: we're not going to come back to your call just now because I'm not going to, don't want to sidetrack our conversation into rants about abortion. I will say this: that some of the most beautiful people I know in life are the Catholic warriors and progressives who I went to jail with in the civil rights movement, who have a belief in a sanctity of life completely, who don't stand in front of abortion clinics to deny somebody else their right to choose, but who believe what they believe and live a life of peace and love and believing in life, and so are against capital punishment and against abortion, and they have a consistent view of that. And I think that's something that we need to talk about more than the other. And most people I know from the Catholic world, most people of the cloth who are dear friends of mine in the Catholic world would never stand in the way of a woman's right to choose and believe what they believe and will preach and talk about something else to kind of make us more aware of what life means. So I think that that's the place I want to go with it, and not to vilify people because of where they are, because Bob Albright would never stop a woman from going into an abortion clinic if that's where she was headed for. So I'm just going to say that. 410-319-8888. And Tim, you're on the air.
Well, this is actually a very stimulating conversation. I just wanted to start out by first telling y'all, I'm actually originally from Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and I've always told people that where I grew up in D.C., we watch Muslim kids and Jewish kids and Christian kids like myself all play together as young kids. And, you know, we grew up not even identifying with religion, just with each other. And I think that what happens is when children grow up and start to get older and start to listen to parents or watch and hear things of hatred, then we begin to start to formulate our opinions of hatred. I've always grown up not ever thinking or worrying about somebody else's religion, because I've always noticed one thing when I started to really dig down into it. See, the Muslims pray to God. The Jewish pray to God. The Christians, we pray to God. So we all have that one thing in common, and that's the love that we need to maintain, hold on to, remember as we go out into this world and as we're dealing with each other. It has nothing to do with anything else but our love for God, and we need to stand on that and stand by that no matter what we do. God said the Jews and the Gentiles, hey, I'm a Christian. I'm the Gentiles, but he gave me the same love that he gave the Jews.
Tim, thank you so much.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the whole question of isolation creates alienation, and we can say anything we want about the other out there. But when we meet people one-on-one and two or three in a dialogue, that's where you begin to recognize, oh, my goodness, you mean we really think alike, you know, about this issue or that issue, and we don't think alike about this one? And I never even knew that, you see. And I think this is what's important about dialogue. It's the meeting of minds. It's the beginning of, I think, what we refer to in our religious traditions as the coming of the kingdom of God. That's a kingdom where all things will be in dialogue rather than isolated or alienated in any way whatsoever.
Tim, you're eloquently speaking about what I think is the universal human experience of yearning, of longing. And what is it we're seeking? We're seeking our brothers, right? So that's the paradigm. That's the those are the dimensions of the relationship that we're all yearning for. So thank you for your call very much.
Absolutely.
And that's it goes beyond that even. I mean, we had a conversation the other week with Michael Krasny in his new book on agnosticism. And agnostics as the skeptics of the world who keep yearning and looking for an answer,
mm-hmm.
and are open to all and not shutting it off. He wrote a very good book about that, mm-hmm. where he took on his friends, the atheist writers, for kind of putting down people who believe in God,
right.
just like it's insane for people who believe in God to put down people who don't.
Right.
And just the yearning for truth, that we all live here, and I think that talk a bit. We only have a couple minutes left. I want you to kind of conclude with what you think about this exhibit that you kind of, one of the reasons you got here is because you've been talking together because of this exhibit, right?
Right, yeah. And we've done many programs surrounding the exhibit. We're doing another one tomorrow night called Judaism, Catholicism 101. And it's an attempt. It's an attempt that after having this exhibit around for a couple of months, you know, we thought, well, maybe we should get back to some very fundamental ideas about the two religions and help people understand the other religion and by the two of us. And that's what we're going to hope to do tomorrow night.
Now, what are you doing this tomorrow night?
This is tomorrow at the Jewish Museum of Maryland.
In Baltimore, here?
Yes, at Lloyd Street and Lombard Street. Yeah.
So if you're among our viewers or listeners here in the Baltimore, Washington area, then please come to Baltimore for that tomorrow evening.
Right.
We want you to be part of that. And if you're not, then the exhibit will come there, and you can continue this dialogue and know more about our guests, because we'll have this online, and we won't give out your telephone numbers online. No.
This exhibit opened up doorways to so many possibilities. Last Sunday, we had three sisters, three Roman Catholic nuns, who told of their story about working among the Jews in Israel and here in the States and things of that nature. And they were just so inspiring. What a fantastic thing. So this exhibit has spawned an awful lot of interest between the Jewish and Catholic community in Baltimore. And every time it goes into any city or any state or whatever, that's often the result. And that's wonderful. And we're hoping to help that along tomorrow night, Jeff and I.
So something I learned in the exhibit. And again, I come back to this. The world can be read in small things. 1978, this particular bishop, this guy becomes pope, and he hosts his first papal audience. There are 3,000 people waiting to see him. The very first person called is his old friend Jerzy, right? That's it. That says it all, that he goes back to his childhood and the, you know, the emotional ties, the lessons learned in childhood.
And this is a story that we don't, that no, very few people know.
But right. The very first private audience, his old friend Jerzy.
So now I have to read that book. Yeah. I want to thank you both for being here. Oh, Rabbi Jeff Bastick, Father Bob Albright, thank you both so much for taking the hour with us.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
I encourage everybody to go see A Blessing to One Another at the Jewish Museum of Maryland if you live in this area, September 2nd through December 26th. So it's been open and stays open until the day after Christmas. Boxing Day, if you're a Brit. And go enjoy it. And we will try to go on our website at steinershow.org and let you know where this exhibit will be coming around the country, so you, wherever you are, maybe you can see it as well. I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content in arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Christina Harrison and Justin Levy. We're directed today by Zachary Coleman and the able Afi Jackson. Our interns today were Shari Barnes and Ashley Boddy. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, view all our old videos from our television programs, please go to steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community here in Baltimore, Maryland. And for Free Speech TV, the only place that's not afraid to give you the news you need to know, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.